I still talk to God sometimes. I ask him if what I'm doing is right or wrong. I'm still waiting for an answer. And until I get one, I'll be out here, waiting, watching. The guilty will be punished.
Junk Food Dinner, episode 128. This week, make way for cut-rate justice as we scrape the bottom of the superhero barrel. Up first, it's clobbering time. Broomstick arms abound as we examine the colossal mid-90s misstep, the Fantastic Four. Then Dolph Lundgren takes it personal and makes it personal as judge, jury, and executioner to the mob in 1989's The Punisher. Finally, Shaq takes the streets back from thugs like Judd Nelson, the help of a sledgehammer, and the power of free throws, and steal from 1997.
That's a cool name.
Don't you patronize me, young man.
Welcome to Junk Food Dinner, episode 128. This is a podcast where each week we scour the internet, video stores, and cable television, looking for the most outrageous and interesting cult films. We're not professional film journalists or critics by any means. We are simply three geeks from Ohio with entirely too much time on our hands. In Ohio, I am Kevin Moss, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mark Fredo in New York, and Parker Bowman in California. Every week, we'll each bring a cult favorite to the table, recalling our personal experiences with the film, discussing its merits, and arguing why we did or did not enjoy it. This week, we take a look at three old-school, low-budget superhero movies, starting with Roger Corman's The Fantastic Four from 1994, The Punisher from 1989, and Steel from 1997. So yeah, this is a show that we've been talking about for a long time. I'm excited to finally do it. There's a lot of movies that we discussed putting in this canon, because I mean, superhero movies are so big now. They're the blockbusters every summer are the big superhero movies, but I mean, there was a time when we were growing up when superhero movies were pretty marginalized, and they were usually released by kind of lower rent studios and usually not a lot of stars. I mean, there's a ton that we could have talked about. Like, I considered doing Meteor Man, which I thought would have been fun. We wanted to do that. What is it? Five Dev Adam?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Three Dev Adam,
which is the Turkish Spider-Man.
Versus,
right?
versus Captain America. Versus that Mexican luchador fellow.
The original 60s Batman movie would have been fun. So there's a lot of movies that
we should have done.
We could have done. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, we all know, you know, Parker's, you're a big superhero fan.
I
liked superheroes growing up, and I think I never got into superhero movies because these were the caliber of superhero movies that we grew up with, and it always just made me bitter that at the time that I loved superheroes, the movies about superheroes sucked so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So. But yeah, Mark, how did you feel about superheroes growing up? Were you into them? Could you care less?
Somewhere in the middle. I liked Batman. I always thought Batman was real cool.
Yeah, Batman was like the one exception in the 80s. His movies got some play, but everything else superhero just didn't seem.
Yeah, I never thought Superman was cool. I always thought Superman was pretty lame. I did get the Death of Superman comic. I thought that was interesting and. My comic book tastes were not skewed towards superheroes, really. I like Spider-Man enough. I don't know. I mean, I love, like, origin stories and stuff, but it's kind of daunting, and some of it's pretty boring, and I don't know. I never actively dislike superhero stuff, but I was never super gung-ho about it either.
Yeah.
I was always turned off by superhero movies because the Superman movie, like all those movies at the time, were like the benchmark for them, and they were always like super goofy to me. I thought they felt like super old and super like antiquated by the time I watched them when I was 8 years old. I thought they just felt like too old worldy. Like, here's an invincible guy. The only thing that can stop him is either a rock or three invincible guys. And it just seemed stupid.
Yeah. So we'll dive into these superhero movies here in a minute, but first let's get into some junk mail. We got some good junk mail this week. First piece of junk mail we have is a voicemail, and this comes from a listener named Ron, who has this to say.
I hope I play the right one.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
Parker and Kevin. This is Ron calling from Spokane, Washington. I love the show, and I just wanted to give you guys a call. And I finally got caught up with all the episodes. I've been listening to your show for quite a while. I just have a few recommendations for you. I really like the anthology episode. It's probably one of my favorite genres, though. One film that I'm not sure if you guys have seen or not, it's called From a Whisper to a Scream. It's an anthology film with Vincent Price, and it kind of centers around this town, and like one of the stories has these creepy kids, so I'm not sure if you've seen that. It was directed by the guy that did Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3. Another one I really like is Soul Survivor. It's kind of similar to Final Destination. It came out in the early 80s. I think Code Red put it out on DVD a few years back. Pretty good film. It's very similar to the Final Destination movies. Another one I'm not sure if you guys have seen is New Year's Evil. It's not a really good film, but, you know, the main character's name is Evil, and it's just, like, really ridiculous. So, I thought those would be some good ones for you guys to do. Also wanted to, I think a few episodes back, Parker was saying that he went to Face to Face, and that's one of my favorite bands, too. So just wanted to give you guys a message, and really enjoy the show. Okay, talk to you later. Bye.
Man, awesome. Thank you, Ron.
I love that Face to Face. Love them.
Yeah. So good recommendations. I've never seen From Whisper to a Scream.
Cool. I did on Instant Watch. You know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I have seen New Year's Evil. I saw that actually at the Spectacle Theater.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fun one.
It is fun.
Maybe we could do that for New Year's this year.
Oh, that'd be cool.
I would like that. When he first
do that and go and 200 cigarettes.
There's go on New Year's Eve,
isn't it?
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I don't think I've seen go since I was like 17 or something. So
yeah, I really liked it.
Who knows? Well, that's because you're so into rave culture.
Yeah, I love raves. Love them.
I know. Rave to rave.
I'm wearing a visor right now that has like a real blinky light on it for no reason.
Yeah, I have a surgeon's mask on. I don't know if you guys can tell that, but it's full of vapor.
Yeah, when he mentioned Soul Survivors, I thought he meant Soul, spelled S-O-U-L, that Eliza Dushku horror movie that came out, and I got really excited because she's a fox. So I was hoping we would get to do that movie.
Just the mere thought of Eliza Dushku gets you excited.
That's all it takes.
Yep.
It gives you a boner.
The next voicemail that we have comes from our old pal Zach.
Hey. Hey, it's Zach from Pittsburgh. Hey, Junk Food Dinner guys, what's up? Clean and sober and at work currently. Listening to the current podcast right now, pretty good. Just want to put a little info. Chris Elliott was on Saturday Night Live during the late 90s when Will Ferrell was coming in and Adam Sandler was leaving. Just listened to last week's with the drunk one. I'm not sure which one's more funnier, where Parker bitches about the older films or Mark bitching about the more modern bro movies, but you should keep one of those, that system going. It's really good. But some suggestions, I guess. 3 o'clock High. I'm not sure if you've done that one yet. It sounds like right up your alley. The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, which has been coming up a lot lately, is a good one. Maybe you should add it to the one where you're going to review Society. And Maximum Overdrive. I feel like you might have done that one, but if you haven't, it's way overdue. But, all right, well, right after you guys is Mark Maron. He's going to be talking to someone important. So, all right, have a good day. Enjoy your burrito.
Thank you, Zach. Excellent voicemail. Yeah, I would love to check out some of those movies. I've seen Maximum Overdrive, love it. Seen 3 o'clock High, also enjoy it. And as we've talked about, like you said several times recently, I also enjoy Texas Chainsaw Massacre too. So should definitely get around to doing some of those.
I think it's nice that he clarified that he was clean sober at work.
Yeah, we don't want to get Zach fired.
No, of course not. I'm sure there's a lot of people I'd like to get fired, but not Zach.
Yeah, everyone's boss listens to Junk Food Dinner, too.
Yeah.
None
what fact. Are you listening to?
Yeah.
The number one podcast amongst bosses.
Rick Ross loves our podcast.
And Springsteen also likes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he loves it. He's called a few times. I can't understand what he says.
I really like that song he wrote about us, Born to Junk. You guys know that song?
The final piece of junk mail we have is an email from longtime listener Jorge from Puerto Rico. He says, greetings, JFD. This is Jorge from Puerto Rico again to say my congrats on doing great shows and giving you some more recommendations. Last time I emailed you, I spoke about maybe making making a horror porn show. Now for a better recommendation, I think you should consider making a Latino horror show. There are plenty of films from Spanish-speaking countries, especially from Mexico, and would fit perfectly in your show. Films like The Brainiac, The Witch's Mirror from the 60s, and the full of sex and Satanism schoolgirl horror film Alucarda from the 70s. I also would love you guys to talk about the Rider of the Skulls, which is about Mexican bandito dressed in black who fights Dracula, the Wolfman, and a headless horseman. The movie is like 60s Batman with a Speedy Gonzalez hat. These movies mix everything from Mario Bava-style gothics to crazy exploitation. Some Santo and Mexican luchador movies would be cool, too. I'm sure you can find these movies with subtitles. Here are some of the trailers, and he includes the trailers for YouTube. And, yeah, I watched some of these earlier today, and they look amazing. I have a book all about exploitation cinema from Mexico that has really got me interested in a lot of these south of the border exploitation movies. And with these kind of as the catalyst, I would love to get into some of these. So I'll go hunting and see if I can find any of these copies of these with subtitles, and we'll definitely try to get to some of these in the near future.
Yeah, some of these sound incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to pick one a few weeks ago, a newer one, called El Bastardos, which I caught on HBO a while back, and it's like a home invasion, like, horror exploitation movie from, like, Mexico, I think. And but after Ghoul Summer, I was like, nah, I don't want to do anything like this anymore, ever again. So.
You've turned over a new leaf.
Yeah, so maybe after doing these crummy children superhero movies, I'll be back in the mood for something more evil, and I'll get on that.
Absolutely. Well, if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, please send us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com, or even better, let your voice be heard and leave us a call on our voicemail line at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. All right. That being said, let's get into some nerd news.
From the global resources of Junk Food Dinner Worldwide, it's time for Nerd News.
The first piece of Nerd News that I have is, it looks like, you guys know who Ruben Fleischer is? He's the gentleman that directed Gangster Squad and Zombieland. He has signed a deal with Warner Brothers to adapt the 1983 Bally Midway video game Spy Hunter into a full-length feature film. This no doubt has everything to do with the new Spy Hunter game coming out for the Nintendo 3DS and PlayStation Vita, which I guess that's what we're doing, making movies to coincide with the release of handheld video games. But, you know, the fact that there's, you know, Battleship and Monopoly and Candyland movies out or coming out shouldn't leave you surprised. This is actually the first time they've tried to bring Spy Hunter to the big screen. I guess several years ago, John Woo and The Rock were going to do a Spy Hunter movie that fell through. And then later, they tried to do another adaptation of this, but never really worked. So this time, they're trying to really make it happen with Ruben Fleischer at the helm. But I don't know. This video game was so-so, but I don't think it's any reason to make a goddamn movie about it. And if we're making movies out of old school arcade games, why not Burger Time? You know what I'm saying? So,
oh man, please, please make a Burger Time movie or Bubble Bubble. Yeah. I've actually Bubble Bubble.
But yeah, I don't know why they're even attempting this, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, there's nothing to this game. Like, it was basically just driving.
And like, right.
I mean, like, I can imagine, like, if somebody's like, yo, Mortal Kombat has to be a movie, let's get on this. Like, because there's something to it. Like, there's, like, a story and, like, things that happen in it, and it's, like, visually exciting. But this game is, like, this game is literally right. just driving on a street.
Well, hopefully the trailer for this movie will have a sweet shot of a car driving into a semi-truck and then spinning out on some oil.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be pretty cool.
Other than that, though, I don't know where they're going to go with it.
I feel like this game had good music, though. Isn't that the case? It's probably another pretty cool theme, right?
Yeah, definitely. But again, not a reason to make a movie out of it.
No, but I'm saying maybe they'll use that music. That would be cool.
Don't get your hopes up.
I never do.
Yeah, I will sit back and eagerly await the Mappy live-action movie.
How long until there's the Bomberman movie? Think about it.
Yeah, as soon as America's ready for it.
Yeah, you can't make a Bomberman movie in a post-9/11 world.
What if? No, that wouldn't work. All right. Well, the next piece of nerd news that I have is a sad piece of nerd news, if you are me or my roommates, or probably a lot of you, and that is that Netflix, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Netflix, but it is a service where you can get DVDs delivered to your home, and they also have an instant watch service where you can watch stuff on your personal computer, or your laptop computer, or your phone.
Well, I'll be dipped in shit and rolling breadcrumbs.
Mm-hmm. Another way you can utilize that is to watch it on your TV while you're eating Chinese food with your roommates and watching shows like, say, Hoarders or Intervention or just these other, like, monuments to human sadness. And Netflix is removing 800 hours of this kind of content. Content from A&E and the History Channel is going to be going away. So that means Pawn Stars, Ice Road Truckers, Storage Wars, American Pickers, Dog the Bounty Hunter, Gene Simmons, Hoarders, Intervention. All of these shows, I really only like Hoarders and Intervention. But other people like other things, so they're probably upset about that. But, yeah, so they're losing all this stuff. So,
oh, hell no!
So now's the time to tape that episode where the girl huffs duster, the one where the guy goes to his friend Pizza's house to buy drugs, the one where the two, like, brothers just, like, whine at their parents and their dad. He gets, like, really upset, but it's really funny because his accent's super thick when he cries. And, yeah, just all these, like, wonderful moments in human suffering are not going to be there while you eat dinner anymore. So, I don't know. Do you guys watch any of this stuff? Are you into misery?
Well, I thought I'd go down the beach today and commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I these are good mindless watches. Sometimes I like to watch the Pawn Stars and the Storage Wars. There's something about that is intriguing to me. Even though those are two of the most annoying shows ever, I like the, you know, I like looking to see what stuff is worth and
sure.
But the people on those shows drive me nuts. Like Pawn Stars especially.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean it's good stuff to like fall asleep to if you don't want to put a lot of attention into what's on the television, but yeah, whatever. I'm not gonna shed any tears over over this.
Parker, I know you're a big Ice Road Truckers fan. Are you upset?
Yeah. Well, I really like the icy roads, and I like when they go slippy, slidey.
Yep.
No, I don't know. I don't really watch these shows too much. As we, I think, talked about last week, like I had no idea what animal hoarding entailed, and I thought it was gonna be real cute and not sad.
Yeah, well, you should definitely watch some of this before it goes away then, because if you even sort of thought it was funny, it's not, but I mean, it's great. It's really very entertaining to watch, and it makes you want to clean, so that's helpful.
That's true. I like stuff that makes me want to clean, since I never do want to do that.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So you're like, oh, I guess I don't need all these newspapers and whatever, like doll heads and...
I do need all those newspapers. Sometimes I've written in those newspapers. I'm not throwing my newspapers away, Mark Fredo, and you can't make me.
Well, stack them by date, at least.
No, they're all just in a big pile right next to my gasoline. And that's where they're staying.
Sure. I'm gonna get you in touch with Doomsday Preppers.
Well, I'm not going to let them take all my dead chihuahuas either.
Sure, no. I mean, you need those. Look, buddy, nobody's saying you don't need those dead chihuahuas.
I will let them take the copy of the Bat Whispers I have, though. I'll compromise on that.
Well, that can be the first thing in your pile when you go to clean up. It's always the first thing that's the hardest.
That's true.
And I know that it's difficult for you to get rid of that Bat Whispers DVD.
It would be very difficult and emotional. The first thing I have in terms of these nerdy news is that the dickhead who made Alvin and the Chipmunks, Stuart Little, and Call the Conqueror, has plans to turn a 60s sitcom, well, I think it was the 50s, turn this sitcom, this olden day sitcom, Mr. Ed, into a movie. I don't know who wants to see a movie about a talking horse. It seems like this idea was completely fucking stupid back in the 50s, back when you're only...
Listen to the mouth on this kid.
back in these olden days, you really only had, like, a couple of options when it came to entertainment. You could either, like, go join the war in Korea, or you could help your friends try to invent the wheel or something, or you could watch Mr. Ed. And, even when I was a kid, like, when I was, like, 7, this would always be on, like, Nick at Night, and I thought it was just idiotic then, and I can't imagine that it would get any better if you added up, if the horse was a cartoon and not a real horse. So.
Yeah, I was going to say the whole magic was in the fact that, you know, just stuffed his fucking horse mouth full of peanut butter. And that's what made him talk.
Yeah, the fact that they were abusing this horse is what made it fun.
No, horses love peanut butter.
Well, you know what I found out recently on the Mr. Ed show? That wasn't a horse at all. It was actually a zebra from the circus that they.
Is that true?
Yeah, that they painted to. Look like a horse, but yeah.
That's not true.
That's impossible.
You can't paint a zebra.
Yeah, that's some real... That's abuse.
I'm not going to do anything like look it up.
I'm going to look that up, because that seems amazing. Too amazing to be believed.
Well, anyway, nobody cares about Mr. Ed. You're right. Everybody knows that any animal can talk now, so the magic of that is worn off. The only way that I will even acknowledge this movie is if they make a please, my father was Mr. Ed, call me Eddie joke or something. You know what I mean?
That would be good.
You know, something timeless like that. Otherwise, I might skip this. Isn't this the same dickhole that's, excuse me, isn't this the same butthorn that's... Because you said he did Alvin and the Chipmunks, right?
Yeah.
Is it the same guy doing Brave Little Toaster?
Yes. Yes, it is.
What a pile of garbage this guy is.
He's a real piece of work.
Butthorn. Yeah, this sounds terrible. I don't know why they have to do this. It seems like for the last 20-25 years they've tried to make every shitty Nick at Night rerun sitcom into a movie. Like we had the Beverly Hillbillies movie and the Brady Bunch movie. Car 54, Where Are You? Fucking Dragnet. Like all these old shows, they had to just fucking drag them out of the vaults and turn them into shitty movies.
No Green Acres movie yet.
Oh, just you wait.
I'm not going to wait. It'll happen. I don't need to wait for it.
Right.
I don't think that anybody would go to see that, because who do you market it to? Do you market it to the people who live in the big cities, or do you market it to the southerners who live on the farms? Like, I don't think anybody would compromise enough to see a movie like that. You have to have one or the other in a movie these days.
That's a divided country.
Mm-hmm.
The next piece of nerd news that I have is it looks like The Mummy, another relic from the past, will be brought back to life by Len Wiseman, the guy who did 2 Underworld movies, Live Free or Die Hard, and this Total Recall remake. Joe Spates, who wrote Prometheus, is in the process of writing the screenplay.
Goodness. Oh, man.
But yeah, the story will be set in modern day, and Universal is looking for a summer 2014 blockbuster release. So,
2004 sounds more right.
This is going to be based on the original 1932 Dracula. Jesus Christ, the original 1932 Mummy.
You had me excited for a second. I thought it would be pretty good.
The 1932 Mummy, directed by Carl Freund. And, this seems terrible. I hated those.
Totally unnecessary.
Yeah, I hated those 90s mummy movies. I've always said that was one of the only movies that I've ever walked out of the theater was that Brendan Fraser mummy movie. So I don't have a whole lot of hope for this, but I do like the original mummy movie. I know Parker will disagree, but I think the 1932 mummy movie is a good version. But yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not psyched about this.
Well, the one thing that's remarkable about that 1932 mummy movie is that somehow the movie itself is older than actual mummies.
But
that's a solid
joke. You need to get your history straight.
It's a very old film, is what I'm trying to say.
I got you.
Oh, I get it now.
Yeah, I don't know. Mummies are pretty dumb and played. I mean, I guess this is going to be like an action movie, big event kind of a thing, right?
I guess. I don't see why it wouldn't be.
I don't know. It seems like they, you know, Brendan Fraser had his fun making a big action mummy movie. It seems like the time would be right to make it scary again. Like, you have to kind of do these things cyclically.
Like, yeah. Well, I think that's what they're trying to do. I think they're saying it's going to be more based on the 32 version, which was, I guess, more of a horror movie.
Well, that sounds all right then. I mean, I'm not saying that it would be scary by any means, because mummies are stupid and not scary, except for in Tales from the
scared.
Dark Side. Huh?
So you're scared?
I'm scared. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know if you guys heard this or saw the film itself, but the writing in Prometheus was horrendous.
Some of the worst writing.
So bad.
Wasn't it also co-written by the Damon Lindelof? He's one of the worst people on Earth. I kind of respect him a little bit, because he's always tweeting about how shitty Lost is, so
that's funny.
Yeah. I like that he gets that. But, that Prometheus is a piece of crap.
It was so bad.
Yeah, I think the only way that I would be excited about this new Mummy movie is if the entire soundtrack was done by the 90s punk band The Mummies.
Sure.
Yeah. I think they should, instead of remaking this version of The Mummy story, they should remake that old 90s cartoon Mummies Alive, because that was good.
With the mummies on the soundtrack.
Yeah, I loved that cartoon. I found the first season of that cartoon at Big Lots the other day for $3, and I didn't buy it. Now I'm having regrets.
Oh, you idiot.
I know, I'm stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
It's my turn?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This final piece of nerd news is the saddest possible piece of nerd news for me. It turns out that the Cabin in the Woods was going to have some sort of deal worked out with the Left 4 Dead video game franchise to have a downloadable content DLE for Left 4 Dead 2 that would have seen the characters from that video game fight zombies inside the cabin and inside the facility in the cabin in the woods, underneath it, rather. But it got scrapped at the last minute because the people who were originally making Cabin in the Woods, MGM, went bankrupt and there was no money or time or anything to do anything like that. Although remnants of this still exist in the Cabin in the Woods movie, as a bunch of the scary monsters from that game series are in the background in certain places. And this is super sad because I love Cabin in the Woods and I love Left 4 Dead, and this would have been super fun. But now... And we could have seen more of that scary clown and all those other guys, I bet. But it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, if the video game was half as good as the movie, I think that could have been pretty interesting. So, yeah. Would have liked to have played that.
This was also supposed to happen. I mean, I just read very little bits about this online, but after Antichrist came out, there was supposed to be a video game based on it.
Come on.
No, I mean, totally serious.
That game, or that movie from Gus Van Zandt or whatever?
Lars von Trier, yeah.
Or Lars von Trier. Same guy.
Lars von Trier.
Von something or other.
No, yeah, there was supposed to be a... I gotta say publicly, I ripped that Lars von Trier joke off, in case the person who made it is listening and forget man. But, no, I don't know anything about it. I just know that it was, like, supposed to happen, and then we made a bunch of jokes about how it would be on Wii, and you'd have to, like, use the Wiimote as scissors, you know. Or if you got to play as the fox that says Chaos Reigns or whatever. So, yeah, I don't know shit about it, but it seems like that's happened more than once where some crazy movie was supposed to have a video game tie-in, and it just doesn't happen. So,
now bummer. I'm stuck playing Spy Hunter.
No, you're stuck watching Spy Hunter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You could always pick up Pokemon.
don't know.
Well,
Parker, you dick.
Kyle, you made it, buddy. You're dropped on the show.
All right, well, let's get into some of the cool stuff on DVD and Blu-ray this week. The first release that I have is FDR, American Badass, from earlier this year, starring Barry Boswick as Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And it's got Kevin Sorbo and a whole bunch of other low-budget actors. After contracting polio from a venomous werewolf bite, FDR won't stop at single-handedly ending the Great Depression and Prohibition. With the help of a team of historic figures, he must end World War II by exacting revenge on the army of Nazi werewolves from the comforts of his Albert Einstein-designed wheelchair of death. An outrageous, over-the-top spoof, FDR American Badass, is the untold true story of our country's greatest monster-hunting president. So a lot of people will probably dismiss this as, you know, kind of riding the coattails of that Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter movie. And I guess that's kind of in the same vein, but if you've seen the trailer for this, this looks much more over the top and much more silly and just kind of out there. I thought the trailer was really cool and really fun. I don't know how well it'll translate to an hour and a half full-length feature film, but I'm definitely my interest has definitely piqued enough that I will give this a rent and check this out. Did you guys see the trailer for FDR American Badass?
Indeed I did. It looks fun.
That's pretty fun. I think we had it on the blog. I can't write that happen.
Yeah, I put that up on the blog.
Yeah, a web blog.
Yeah, I like when wheelchairs have rocket launchers and stuff. I think Guar did that once for a character.
You're thinking of Steel.
Also Steel. Also Steel. Yeah, that's fun that my brain works like that, where I remembered Guar instead of a movie I watched 3 hours ago. Yeah, this seems like kind of a thing that's happening now because of the, I guess, those books that did this where they took literary things and, you know, real things and mixed them with monsters. And the Abraham Lincoln movie came out. There's two Abraham Lincoln movies, the real one, the Vampire Hunter one, and then there's like an Abraham Lincoln versus Zombies one that's on Netflix, I think. And there's like two or three zombies from, or not Nazis from like Mars movies that are out now, or like Nazis living underneath the Earth's crust movies. So I think this is going to be a big fun thing where they take things that happen in real life and turn them into B-movies, and I'm cool with that. They're probably all going to suck, but
yeah,
I'm cool with the idea.
I think it's going to get completely oversaturated at a extremely rapid rate, and that will not be fun. But there'll probably be at least one or two that are worth watching. I thought the Jane Austen, you know, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, and I thought that was just some of the laziest, like, stupidest shit ever. And it's not even sort of surprising that that took off and that everybody else was like, I can be lazy and stupid. So I think that that's just like this, and it's just going to get flooded. Just flooded with garbage. Like the area between my apartment and the building.
Flooded with Garbage is actually one that's coming out soon. It's where Teddy Roosevelt, during his time when he literally, physically cleaned up New York, it turns out there was a blob that was making it all happen. So Teddy Roosevelt fights a blob in the streets of New York. That's the one I'm working on. Don't steal my idea.
I'm not, because I like blobs. And, yeah, Teddy Roosevelt's okay.
Yeah. He got shot and then kept making his speech after being shot.
No, that's 50 Cent. You're thinking of 50 Cent.
No. He got shot and then made a movie with very big-boobed lesbians that we watched on this show.
Yes.
That was a good movie.
God.
I'm going to pick that movie again for next week. It was good.
Okay.
The first DVD I have is Marvel's The Avengers, because I like those Avengers. I'm not going to tell you the plot of this movie, because you probably already know about it, because it's like the biggest movie ever made. But I love this movie, and I'm glad that it's on DVD and Blu-ray and all that, because I'm going to watch it like 800 more times. And I really like that Hulk. That is all.
Yeah, I was excited to see this, but I didn't. So now that it's out on home video, I look forward to checking this out. I didn't really see any of the other movies leading up to this. I saw Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk movie. I didn't see Thor or who else was in there?
Captain America.
Captain. I didn't see Captain America either. So, you know, I think this will be fun to watch, but I'm not going into it as a huge comic book fan, but, you know, just as an action blockbuster, I think this could be, you know, a fun watch one Saturday.
Yeah, I saw the Avengers at midnight in Times Square during a thunderstorm. So that was pretty cool. And also nerve-cracking. So I don't know if I can replicate that kind of experience on home video. But, I mean, I definitely would watch this again. I saw a guy watching this on an iPad on the train, which is really not the way this movie, or I'm going to go ahead and say any movie, is meant to be watched. But, yeah, I don't know. This movie was super fun, but I'm not insane over it like some people.
Hey, it's got that Captain America. I love him. There's deleted scenes where he's super sad. I like that.
The first DVD that I have this week is actually something I've never seen, and I'm only picking it because I'm hoping that our listeners will tell me if I should watch it, and that is American Horror Story, the first season, available on Blu-ray in a 3-disc version and DVD in a 4-disc version. So if you buy the DVD, you get an extra disc, which probably isn't actually a selling point. But this is a TV show that I heard things about, but not really anything specific. It will just be like, American Horror Story. And, like, that's pretty much it. So I don't know if I should see this. I saw some commercials and, like, maybe, like, a minute or two on TV, but it was, like, way too late in the season. So I'm hoping that somebody can tell me whether or not I should watch this and if I would like it. Also, I'm curious if you guys have seen it. And I just want to share with you guys what Jennifer Shipley, Amazon customer, said about this. And that is, characters are developed and the acting is amazing.
No, I haven't seen this. I don't have cable, so unless it's on Netflix or if it's, you know, somehow on the computer for free, I probably won't see this. But I've heard, like you, just kind of just general things about it. Some people say it's good. Some people are like, oh, yeah, my girlfriend watches that show. But I don't couldn't say one way or the other. But, yeah, I'll check this out if it's readily available.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is that, like, everybody seems real, like, yeah, that's a show that exists.
Yeah, my wife started watching it and then gave up, but she didn't give up because it sucked. Like, she just lost interest, like how sometimes it happens. So that's probably not a very good sign, I guess. I don't know. I've heard that it's good, but, like, I haven't heard from anybody that it's, like, I think mostly it's just, like, Walking Dead, where, like, it's horror on TV. And that doesn't happen, so when it does, you have to, like, be into it, but it's probably not that great.
Mm.
I guess that's my impression, yeah, but I haven't really watched it.
That's the thing, is I saw some cool imagery, and, like, I heard it's just, like, real freaky, but I don't know. I mean, Walking Dead is horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. I want to give this the benefit of the doubt, because I, like, things I've seen, and I guess things that I've heard, just not really anything, but, yeah, I don't know. I kind of don't know if I rent this, like if it's at the video store next time I go, I might pick it up if I can get the whole season or something, but I don't know. I don't know.
The next release that I have is Lone Wolf and Cub, the complete 6-film series from the early 70s, out on Blu-ray for the first time. He is the most feared assassin in all of Japan, known only as the Lone Wolf, pushing his young son along the back roads of feudal Japan. In a heavily armed baby cart, he strikes fear into the black hearts of evildoers everywhere. So this was a movie, the original first two movies were trimmed down and released in the U.S. under the Shogun Assassin title. But this is all 6 of the Lone Wolf and Cub movies as they were released in Japan in high definition for the first time on Blu-ray. And, yeah, so this looks awesome. I have only seen Shogun Assassin. I have not seen any of the Lone Wolf and Cub movies in their entirety. So I would be excited to check this out. I've heard nothing but good things about at least the first few movies. I don't know if they get progressively worse as they go on, like a lot of series tend to, but I think these remain pretty consistent from what I've read. So now that these are on Blu-ray for one price, I might have to just pick up the whole set and kind of dive right into them. Have you guys seen any of the Lone Wolf and Cub movies?
I hate them.
Oh, yeah, I remember. I heard the episode. I wasn't on it, but I heard how badly you talk trash about that Shogun Assassin, so.
It's some of the worst things I've ever seen.
Yeah, Parker's disdain for this film really turned me off to it as well, so I hate it now.
I made a convincing argument.
Yeah, you really sold me on not liking this.
No, I think this will be excellent. So, yeah, I look forward to checking this out.
The next thing I have is more superhero stuff. Surprisingly enough.
In time for our superhero show.
Mm-hmm. This is Batman, The Dark Knight Returns, Part 1. DC is real shitty about doing movies, for the most part, and TV shows and stuff, but they're real good about doing cartoon movies. And they've taken what is probably the best Batman story of all time, Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns, something that, along with The Watchmen, completely changed comic books back in the olden days, and they've turned it into a cartoon, which I hear is good already, despite that it is only out today, and from people that I know like the Batmans. And it concerns a Batman who is retired, but comes back and becomes the Batman again, despite his old age. And it's the story is pretty magnificent. I assume that this DVD has the same quality as the rest of their cartoon movies. One thing that's weird, though, one of these customer reviews says, obviously this was done to flesh out what was really a very short story within a greater Justice League tale. And that's not true at all. It's had nothing to do with the Justice League. It was a very, very long Batman story at that. So that person is stupid. Don't listen to them. But this rules, and I'll probably do it on the show one day because it's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. As little as I'm interested in superhero movies, animated superhero movies really fall off my radar. But if you say they're good, I'll take your word for it.
Well, the story it's based on in, like, the comic is, like, super dark. Like, it's what made Tim Burton make his Batman movie so dark. Like, this is what changed Batman from being a goofy, shark-fighting dickhead to being, like, a dark, brooding kind of a guy.
You know how I feel about that.
So this is probably pretty violent and dark and grim.
We shall see.
The next DVD that I have is a film that we are all familiar with and love, and was actually one of the first films we did on the show, our very first episode, and that is Eating Raoul from the Criterion Collection, out on Blu-ray and DVD. This, of course, is about Mary and Paul Bland, played by Mary Warnoff and Paul Bartel. They need money. They want a restaurant. So they start killing swingers and sex perverts, taking their money. There's really phenomenal everything in this. There's cannibalism, there's sex jokes, there's Mary Warnoff, there's Paul Bartel, Ed Begley Jr. This is like one of my favorite movies of all time. And if I had a Blu-ray player, I would buy this on Blu-ray, but I don't. This also has a fake commercial in it that I think is really funny for a dog food company where they say, "Your Majesty, this is delicious." I think that's very funny. So I you can listen to the first episode. Actually, probably don't listen to the first episode. It's probably awful. But not that this is any better. But God damn it. Just everybody go watch Eating Raoul. Everybody watch it.
Yeah, no, this Criterion Collection looks really cool. It's got a lot of bonus features that I think if you're a fan of Eating Raoul, you'll definitely want to check out. It's got audio commentary. It's got two short films from Paul Bartel, Secret Cinema and Naughty Nurse from the late 60s, which should be interesting, like a making of documentary, gag reel, interviews with Bartel and Warnoff from archival footage. And I think this will be really cool. I'll definitely be checking this out.
Yeah, this movie rules.
Yeah, and it seems like such a weird movie to get the Criterion Collection. I mean, I guess in retrospect, it is kind of, you know, ahead of its time. But at the time, it seemed like a pretty... I mean, it's a very well-done movie, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't seem usually like... The Criterion, it's usually kind of stuffy art films, and this is definitely not. The final Blu-ray I have this week is Arachnophobia, out on Blu-ray for the first time. The 1990 movie starring Jeff Daniels and John Goodman, directed by Frank Marshall. About Dr. Ross Jennings and his phobia of spiders and what happens in a small town when these spiders get all up in his business. This is directed by
I hope
Frank
that's
Marshall.
What it says on the back of the DVD.
It does. this is directed by Frank Marshall, who produced Back to the Future and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And, yeah, I like this movie. I haven't seen it in a while, so maybe it'll be good to see it again in high def. Are you guys fans of the Arachnophobia?
Indeed. Mm-hmm. I think, like, shortly after I moved here, Kevin Merriman and I saw Arachnophobia on a 35mm print, and it was still funny. It was still pretty good.
Yeah.
Other than Always Rules.
Yeah, Julian Sands, the world's most perfect human, is in this movie, so I'm into it. And you know the problems I've been having with small-town spiders.
Right.
That's true.
The final thing I have is Zombie Babies from 2011. I don't know anything about this, but when a local entrepreneur advertises a new painless late-term abortion method, a group of couples flock to his hotel to take advantage. During their weekend retreat, a freak accident reanimates the fetuses, filling them with a desire for vengeance and a taste for human flesh. And that sounds fucking sweet.
Yeah,
sounds like any zombie movie.
Yeah, except it's about babies and fetuses.
Yeah.
Yeah, also, I don't know. This sounds like an anti-abortion movie, and I remember when we watched The Suckling.
Yeah, that didn't turn out well at all.
No, you guys must be thinking of something else, because The Suckling rules.
I also have recently watched The Unborn 2, which is a similar theme, and it's awful. And those It's Alive
movies.
I'm
real excited about that.
Yeah. No, this sounds awful. Unless it's like the Muppet Babies with zombies, I don't want any part of this.
Yeah, they open up a vagina.
Did you guys
and
see
then...
Grace?
All right, well, that just about wraps it up for the DVDs and Blu-rays. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about our first shitty superhero movie, The Fantastic Four from 1994, so stick around.
Are you on Twitter? Are you sick of all the dorks you're following, though? Spice things up by following us at Junk Food Dinner. Following JFD on Twitter turns every bored look at your phone into a party of extreme magnitude. You'll get show updates, you'll get some jokes, you'll get the airing of grievances, and you'll get up-to-date information on the ingredients of the sandwiches we're currently eating. Twitter.com/junkfooddinner.
Hello, I'm Dean Stockton of Eastern State University in America, and I'm prepared to offer you a full science scholarship.
Victor used the college, used its modern scientific equipment to conduct strange, forbidden experiments.
Somewhere's out in Cop Killer, Queens. The Bodine stop limousines and niggas flee the scene. Somebody on his back bleeding, vest all cracked up.
Freeze, cloud officer down, request the backup.
Listen, dude, don't get me misconstrued as a sniper. It's reborn not to be confused with V the Viper. We the Peter Parker, we the Peter Piper. See the type of pee the diaper, blame it on the wiper. It's really not your concern why I got the knife, sir. You should just remain calm and not get... No! Slash his windpipe, he had them type of eyes. He might be still alive. How do you get this thing to hyperdrive? Oh, give my props to the shooter. Prices at an all-time low in the future. Something like 14, they must be on horse pills. OT and 03 to re-up on force fields. At that cost deal, he plotted the coordinates. 2003 winter time, Upper West Side.
It's Quad.
Poison!
are such things as dreams are made on.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 128, our superhero show. And the first and probably worst movie we're doing on the program this evening is 1994's The Fantastic Four, directed by Ole Sassone. It's a fun name. This is, of course, the story of four astronauts who are hit with cosmic rays and they get superpowers. Let me give you the tag for this film. Part elastic, part invisible, part fire, part stone. So, cool. they also fight one of the coolest villains ever, Dr. Doom. This movie's never intended to be released, and it was only made to hold on to the copyright for the Fantastic Four. And as such, it looks like it was a movie that was intended never to be shown to anyone. The Thing looks like he is covered in plastic. Mr. Fantastic's stretching ability pretty much consists of broomstick arms. I don't know, man. This is really something else, and this is kind of the stuff of legend for a long time. Actually, I'm holding in my hand right now Parker Bowman's VHS copy of this that he lent me the only time we've ever met, and every time I send him something, I'm like, oh, I should send that back, and then I never end up in the box. But it's a photocopied, like, bootleg cover, and it says, "The movie they don't want you to see." It's true.
Yeah.
It's like the first time that it's ever been true. This is the back of the box. Let me read the copy for you. "When crazy Dr. Doom," crazy is capitalized, also the is capitalized, "is going to blow up the world, the Fantastic Four must spring," also capitalized, "into action. This is pure cheese. The special effects are no more than rubber suits and broomsticks." There you go. "It also seems like they could not afford lighting. Rumor has it that Marvel and Roger Corman put this on the shelf for good. But now is your chance to see this super cheese film." Super cheese is a very good way to describe this. This is like one of those things that you just heard about forever, and then you finally get a chance to see it, and it does not live up to the hype, I don't think. I think that this, after about 10 minutes, stops. It definitely gets its toe right over that, so bad it's good, air quotes kind of thing, into just wretched, just like almost unwatchable. So I was excited to be able to see this, 10 or 15 years ago or whenever Parker lent me this tape, but it was not the experience that I was anticipating. It was pretty painful. So watching this again was no treat. I don't know. What do you guys think of it? Had you ever seen this before, or was this... I mean, obviously, Parker, you love the Fantastic Four, right?
I don't love them, but I do like them quite a bit. They're up there. I like them. But yeah, I saw this once, when I got it. I found it at a thrift store. And, I was very eager to get into it because it was like right when I was first starting to get into, this was like 6 years ago, and it was right when I was first starting to get into comic book, like superhero comics, like who weren't Batman and Watchmen, pretty much. Like a lot of the comics I read were like Hate and Johnny and, what's that one guy? Sandman, stuff like that, like some of the fringier stuff. And I was never really into superheroes other than Batman and Watchmen for like a long, long time. So I found this right around when I was getting into that. So I was real excited to watch it. And it was a real piece of crap. And like I'd always heard that it was, like just this epic sort of piece of crap. And I was expecting it to be, like you said, like one of these so bad it's good. But it's really just so bad that it's bad. And it's kind of hard to even look at it as a movie because it was never, intended to be released. Although I guess maybe the writers and directors thought it would be released, so maybe it's valid to view it as a movie rather than just a way, an exercise in keeping a property under mischievous means. But this is very crummy. Like all the special effects are just the worst. I mean, really, they didn't put enough money into it. Like they made the Thing. They gave him like a big rubber suit to wear. And they realized it would cost them a lot of money if they kept turning Sue invisible and turning Johnny into fire and turning, you know, making Reed stretch out and stuff. So most of the action in this movie is just those three guys standing behind the thing. Like, well, he bounce, bullets bounce off of him and stuff. And so that's real shitty. And, I mean, yeah, like, the whole thing's super shitty. Dr. Doom is here, but they, like, kind of treat him like he's a secret, and, like, we don't know he's Dr. Doom for most of the movie. The Fantastic Four doesn't even meet him until 55 minutes into the movie, which is real strange, because, you know, he's their main bad guy, and him and Reed have a very sort of rivalry relationship going on where they're, like, kind of almost friends but not really, and then they hate each other, and there's, like, a big emotional thing between Reed Richards and Dr. Doom that's just not here one bit. And instead of exploring their relationship, we get a bunch of Mole Man robbing banks for some reason. And I guess that's a mistake that a lot of superhero movies get into, is that they, you know, for the sequels, they add too many villains. But in this one, Fantastic Four just decided to throw all the villains in the first movie, just for fun. So that's awful. Yeah, everything about this movie is awful. It's you know, unless you're like a big comics fan or a big Fantastic Four fan, this is not a bad movie to seek out because it's, you know, so good it's, or so bad it's good. It's like just boring and crummy. In fact, the best part of this movie, I thought, I stopped watching it for a minute, like I turned it up and like went into the kitchen to make a sandwich, and there's a part where Ben Grimm is like being homeless for some reason and like draped in rags and hanging out in an alley. And and he talks to somebody, and I was like, you know, in the kitchen, I couldn't see the screen, I was just making a sandwich, and the person he talks to says like maybe one line, like he says like, hey, you're a freak, I'm getting out of here, or something. And I was like, hey, you know, that sounds like Carlos from Freddy's Dead. And then I looked it up, and it was Carlos from Freddy's Dead, so I'm very pleased with myself. So that was the best part of this movie for me.
Yeah, this movie is just god-awful. I had always heard the legends of it. It was always one of those ones that before the internet, I would never seek out. You know, you had to go to like comic book conventions or something to find this movie. So I was never going to seek this out. But now with the age of the internet, it's very easy to find. And it's just one of these notoriously bad movies. So when watching this, for the first part of the movie, it borders on quality from like, have you guys ever seen like those Star Wars fan-made or Star Wars or Star Trek fan-made movies where guys like literally make a Star Trek movie in their garage? It had that quality at the worst, and then at best it was like a passable like made-for-TV movie, but it just was always so terrible. For the first 20 minutes, I had no idea what was happening. It's just so convoluted, and the story is just so weird, and I never liked the Fantastic Four growing up, so I wasn't really familiar with the backstory, but it is just awful. I thought the Thing makeup, I mean, for the quality of this movie, actually looked pretty good. You know, it's compared to everything else in this movie, the Thing's makeup looks like fucking, you know, Industrial Light and Magic shit, but everything else is just awful. The Invisible Woman is, you know, just the cheesiest invisible effect ever. The Human Torch is played by the guy who played Bug in Uncle Buck, so that's something. But yeah, it's just all in all just a horrendous movie. It gets better as it goes on. Like it just starts off as total shit, and it progressively gets a little bit better. But all in all, it is. Fairly unwatchable, and so unless you're, like Parker said, a huge comic book fan or a huge Fantastic Four fan, there's really no reason to seek this out.
Yeah, one thing that's amazing about this is, I mean, like Dr. Doom, like Mark was saying, like he's awesome. He's like one of the best villains. You know, at times in the comics, he's like saved the world, you know, because that makes a villain very complex, and I like that kind of thing. He's almost defeated God in a fight before. One time he switched bodies. He made Reed Richards switch bodies with him, not because he wanted to live Reed Richards' life, but because he knew that Reed Richards would be really, really sad if Dr. Doom had his life. Like, just really cool evil shit. Like, he's such a cool, complex character. And in this, he's just a fucking jokester. Like it's just so horrible what happens to him in this. Like I said, he's a guy who has almost beaten up God in a fight, and yet in this movie, he gets defeated because Reed Richards, a fucking science nerd, punches him in the face like 3 times. That's it. That's the whole climactic fight. In order to defeat Dr. Doom, they punch him a couple of times. Not all of them. Just the nerdiest, Reed Richards-iest one of them. And it's just terrible. Also, a lot of the other things that Reed Richards does in fights is he puts his foot out, like, you know, over a doorway so that when the henchmen are coming in, they trip over his foot, which is something he wouldn't even need superpowers for. Like, any normal person could just do that. But, yeah, so bad. It's such a sad representation of Dr. Doom, who's one of the coolest characters in comics.
Yeah, it is. Everything about this is ridiculous. Do they ever refer to the guy as Mole Man in this movie? Because I didn't know what the fuck he was. I thought for a second, like, the DVD fucked up and I was watching a Leprechaun movie.
Yeah, he looks a lot more like Leprechaun. I think they even call him a Leprechaun at one time than Mole Man. But yeah, I don't think they ever do call him Mole Man. The only way that you could tell that he is Mole Man is that he lives underground briefly.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Wretched stuff.
Yeah, I mean, several times in this movie, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? What did I miss? Like, I've been watching this the whole time. Did I miss something? But no.
Yeah, and then, it's very hard to get into. Like, it's a mess of bullshit, this movie.
Yeah, well, it's funny, too, because in recent times, I guess the entire cast and some of the crew and director of this movie has, like, assembled at comic book conventions. And, you know, I saw some footage on YouTube of them kind of talking to a room full of nerds about, you know, making this movie, which is surprising because I think everybody involved in this movie would hope to forget that this even existed. So the fact that they're even willing to acknowledge its existence and, like, get in front of a group of people and talk about it, that's pretty amazing to me.
That just about wraps it up for 1994's The Fantastic Four. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about The Punisher from 1989. Just stick around.
Tired of only hearing your junk food dinner hosts talk to you? You want to start talking to them? Then pick up your Zach Morris like cellular phone and dial 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. Leave us a message about the movies we've talked about. Did we give a good review to a movie you think sucks? Did we take a crap on your favorite movie? Let us know. Or call in to suggest a movie, or tell us why you hate LeBron James. Remember to leave a name and the city you represent when you call. We're very lonely, and rarely hear the voices of other humans.
So dial this number now, if you dare. Tell them that it sent you.
Kill him again. Try to identify the man in front of you, but it ain't the gold, the gear, or the money though. Swift intellect, and this with plenty of. Like if it's dark, I'll spark every one of you. I throw a mic in the crowd if it's questions. I got the answer, it includes direction. Go manufacture a map to me after a blast of a master that has to make musical master. Cause attack your rap to his handicap. You never hold a mic again, try to hand it back. For every rapper that comes, I cut off his thumbs, put a record to his neck, and he swallows a hump, slice from ear to ear, so he can hear better. Before he bleed to death, hear heavy letter. And you can see how quick and thick your blood can get if you try to change the style of the subject. As I can deepen the rhyme, I'm becoming a MC murder. Before I'm done, I'ma prepare the chamber. The torch is coming up. Trip through the mind. At the end, you'll find it's the Punisher. Kill him again.
If society won't punish the guilty, he will.
You see this board here? Every time he kills somebody, I put a red pin in it. So far, the only thing that I've got to show for it These little calling cards here, and a whole bunch of these.
Now let me tell you something about this Punisher. If he ever shows up within 1,000 yards of me, he'll find out what the word punished really means.
He defends the innocent. But if you're guilty, he gives no warning and shows no mercy.
What the hell is this?
Trouble.
Dolph Lundgren, Louis Gossett Jr.
Mr. P, happy hunting!
The Punisher. Justice with a vengeance.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner, episode 128. The next superhero movie we're going to be taking a look at is The Punisher from 1989. This is a movie that it was one of the first Marvel adaptations that I remember coming out, aside from Howard the Duck, of course. But this was before Marvel was a huge force in the movie world, and very few Marvel things got turned into movies. So I was super excited to see this. Unfortunately, I was only 7 years old at the time, and I wasn't allowed to see R-rated New World action movies. But I eventually got my hands on this when it came out on home video and on cable, and was really a big fan of this. I was a huge fan of the Punisher comic books as a kid. I had two awesome Punisher posters on my wall as a youth. And Punisher, as we talked about when we reviewed Punisher Warzone, was, you know, one of the guys in the Marvel universe that I really latched on to, because he wasn't a superhero per se. He was just a vigilante, and that spoke to me. It always seemed more exciting and more badass than some guy in tights, just a guy with a bunch of weaponry killing criminals. So this movie, it seems tailor-made for New World action exploitation line of films, and that's really what it feels like. It doesn't really feel too much like a superhero movie, and more just like a you know, an action home video staple like Cobra or Commando or something like that. So this, of course, stars Dolph Lundgren as Frank Castle, aka the Punisher, who has long been thought dead after the murder of his family. He has been living underground in the sewers and taking out the evil where they come up, but after taking out some of the mob guys, he has left the mob weak for the Japanese Yakuza to come in and try to take over control of the American market, and by doing so they kidnap the children of all these prominent mob figures, these Japanese Yakuza, and hold them for ransom. Punisher's willing to leave this well enough alone, but when he finds out that children are being victimized because of his vigilante ways, he has to get involved and save the kids from the Yakuza. So, like I said, this is out of all these superhero movies that we're going to be talking about tonight, I think this is the best. This is one that I actually own on DVD, and I still to this day enjoy watching it. There's a lot of stylized, kind of cool violence in this. I think Dolph Lundgren is great. I mean, when I was a kid, Dolph Lundgren was pretty much the man. He played two of my childhood heroes, The Punisher and He-Man. So how could I not, you know, just worship Dolph Lundgren and his 80s badassery? I think this is great. It's got Louis Gossett Jr. As the cop who was his Frank Castle's partner back in the day, and he's kind of on the case trying to solve you know, if Frank Castle's really alive and if he is the Punisher, and eventually kind of teams up and joins sides with him. But you know, it's a New World picture. It's low budget, but it's still kind of got a lot of the, like I said, the 80s action charm of things like Cobra and Chuck Norris movies and things like that. It feels very much in that same vein, much more so than a superhero movie. I love the title sequence. I think in this movie is really cool. I think that starts the movie out right. And there's not a lot of downtime in this movie. It's pretty much all badass stuff. It's, you know, either Dolph Lundgren riding a motorcycle through the sewers, or stealthily taking out bad guys, or Yakuza talking shit to Italian mob bosses. It's a lot of fun. So this is the one movie this episode that I can wholeheartedly recommend. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. But I'm interested to find out what you guys thought of 1989's The Punisher.
Do I sound all right?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like you, I have to say that this was the best movie that we watched this week. And even that is, it's a weird thing to call a movie the best, because for me, it was just kind of there. I didn't think that it was amazing. I didn't grow up with it either, but I thought it was definitely, I mean, especially after watching these two other movies, this was, I mean, this was a breath of fresh air in that aspect. So, I guess I should say that it is definitely worth watching. And there's some cool stuff. The fights at the end, you know, with all the red lighting and that kind of stuff is pretty cool. The knives and the shoes and, you know, stuff like that. So there's definitely a lot to like about this. But, I don't know if I'm going to find myself watching over and over again. But, yeah, I thought Dolph Lundgren was pretty good. I also really liked the opening title sequence. I did not care for the monologues at the beginning and the end. There's, you know, some other stuff that, you know, this, but certainly not enough to make me want to, like, shut it off, like, say, the Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah, I saw this movie when I was a kid. My dad showed it to me when it was on VHS, and we rented it. And I wasn't really too aware of who the Punisher was at the time, but I was very aware of who Dolph Lundgren was at the time, on account of He-Man and Rocky and stuff. This movie, I haven't watched it since then. It starts out real ham-fisted, like they kind of bring you up to speed real quick, which, is all right, because I don't think the Punisher really needs an origin story, but they're real just kind of sloppy with how they did it. Like, they've got a news reporter on TV, and they're like, this gangster's getting out of jail today. He's been in jail for 5 years for killing a cop and his family. In unrelated news, a guy who seemingly has training from cops has been going around killing mobsters. These are two unrelated stories, and we'll keep you posted. And it was very dumb. For a guy who wants to remain incognito, he sure drives the loudest motorcycle in the world. I don't know. This movie's all right. Like, it just kind of seems like one of these movies, you know, like a Commando or one of these kind of like just nondescript, but action-y and cool, 80s action movies that we've talked about where there's just a lot of guys getting shot with a lot of Uzis. And that's cool, but it doesn't feel very Punisher-y to me. For one, Frank Castle never wears a shirt with a skull on it in this entire movie, which...
Yeah.
I don't know why you would get rid of that. That'd be like having a Superman suit with no big S on it, Zack Snyder. But...
What if he's listening?
He might be. Actually, after you guys' review of Sucker Punch, he's not listening anymore.
Oh, that might be true.
But, yeah, so, I mean, I don't know why you would get rid of the icon, you know, the Punisher icon in this movie. He doesn't really feel Punisher-y because he doesn't have the skull. And for other reasons, I can't really put my finger on. Like, I mean, this just kind of, I don't know if it was the time or whatever, but this just feels like sort of, you know, you could have had, this could have just been any action movie at the time. I mean, there's nothing really specific about it that makes me feel like this isn't the Punisher, but it just doesn't the way that the two newer movies do. So I don't know what that's about, but I mean, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's all right. There's like some cool fights in it. The Punisher kills a lot of dudes. I don't know. Like, I mean, this is just all right. Like, if this was like just some normal action movie we were watching with like Chuck Norris or like just some action movie guy, like, I'd be like, yeah, this is pretty all right. But I mean, the fact that this is supposed to be like the Punisher, like, I would expect a little bit more from it on account of how much I like the Punisher, and it's just not really there. Like, it, I don't know. It's all right.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I like about it, though, is the fact that it's not overly superhero-y. And, you know, like I said, Punisher has never really been a superhero-type guy. It's more of a vigilante-type thing. And so if you're not looking for, you know, a real, you know, connection to the comic book, I think it stands on its own as just an 80s cheesy action movie. The guy that directed this, Mark Goldblatt, certainly knows his way around an action movie, as he's worked as the editor on some of the best action and genre movies of all time. He did Humanoids from the Deep, Halloween 2, The Terminator, Commando, Predator 2, Last Boy Scout, Super Mario Brothers, True Lies, Showgirls, Starship Troopers, Bad Boys 2, X-Men, Last Stand, and Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So he definitely knows how to edit an action movie. And I think this movie, like I said, is very well paced. The action is tight. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of downtime. And, you know, plain and simply, Dolph Lundgren's just a badass. So, I don't know. For those reasons alone, I think this is a fun action movie. Maybe not, you know, the best comic book adaptation, but still, like you said, as an action movie goes, still a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's not that I wanted it to be, like, crazy, like, you know, I didn't want it to be the Avengers or anything, but I mean, because, you know, like, when we talked about Warzone, like, that's not, like, some crazy, farcical, whimsical, Thor-esque movie or anything, but that, I don't know, that felt more Punisher-y to me than this does. Like I said, I can't really put my finger on it, but this just doesn't feel like it's the Punisher. It just feels like it's some guy.
Yeah, and that's a fair thing. I remember when I was a kid being really disappointed that there was no skull on his shirt anywhere and just like being confused by it. Like, why don't they have that?
Yeah, that's like the main part of who he is. Also, the thing with like having to save the children seemed kind of weird. Like, maybe that was a cultural thing at the time because they also used it in Batman Returns.
Well, I think that's the way – I mean – honestly, that was probably at the behest of Marvel because they were probably scared that this would kind of look like just a vigilante movie and that he didn't really have any kind of like hero-y qualities. So I was thinking that was probably something Marvel asked like to put in and say, you know, can they have him save these kids, make him more kind of hero and less vigilante? But who knows?
Yeah, and also just to put some kids in there because kids, even though this is like you know, a more violent comic. It was probably, they probably wanted to get some kids to see it. So if you throw some kids in, then maybe either parents would be tricked into thinking it was all right for their kids or kids would seek it out more or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it was rated R and I don't feel like it was really marketed towards kids. Because I remember when I, you know, first became aware of it, I don't think they advertised it a lot in like Marvel comic books. I think I just saw trailers for it like I would any other, you know, Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger movie on TV.
Well, this was back in the good old days when having a rated R sticker on your movie meant that it was for kids.
Right.
The part in this, like the Punisher gets stabbed at one point and like he goes back to his base and he like puts a knife in the fire and then he puts it on the wound. That was the first time I ever saw that, I think, as a kid, and I didn't know why it happened, and I thought it was, like, just the coolest, toughest thing. And that was the only part of this movie that I remembered from watching it as a kid.
Well, if that stuck with you, that's something.
Yeah, that was a cool part.
The cauterizer.
All right, well, that just about wraps it up for The Punisher from 1989. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to take a look at our final shitty superhero movie, Steel, from 1997, so stick around.
I know you will find this hard to believe, but podcasting is not a lucrative business. In fact, Kevin, Mark, and Barker barely have enough money to feed their gambling, drug, and pornography addictions. So, needless to say, they cannot afford big advertising campaigns to promote the show. That's where you come in. Do you enjoy what you hear every week? Help spread the word about Junk Food Dinner by telling your friends about us. These can be real, flesh and blood friends, or just some creeps you talk to on movie-related message boards. Either way, don't keep JFD all to yourself. Spread the word, you selfish bastard. Just kidding, you know we love you, baby.
And if you like it and you want it, you'll get greedy for it! You'll want it every day of your life, and it can happen to you!
Yesterday, we all knew she had the shakes from her morning coffee breaks. She was found in the nude on her 27th moon. But just don't look up in the sky, 'cause you can no more. There ain't no point in waiting on the Man of Steel. No, New York, it's me.
citizens of tomorrow on the streets today. One man must stand up for justice.
We make our own kind of weapons to take out the ones in the streets.
To stop the enemy without hurting them.
With a heart of gold, a will of iron.
This hammer tied.
And a body of steel.
Where'd he go?
The Batcave?
Shaquille O'Neal, Steel.
Welcome back to Junk Food Dinner. The next movie we're talking about is Steel from 1997. This is a movie starring Shaquille O'Neal, who you may remember from being so silky around the rim all those years in the NBA. This is at the time when Shaquille O'Neal was like the coolest guy on earth, and because he was so good at slam dunking, they let him be in video games and movies, and they gave him a record contract and stuff like that. You know, real traditional type stuff. This is directed by Kenneth Johnson, who did a lot of work on V and Alien Nation and a lot of stuff like that. And it's based on a comic book that came out in like the mid-90s. At one point, Superman died, and in his stead, four different Supermans showed up. One of them was like kind of like a Terminator-type cyborg. One of them was a little kid. One of them was like a weird raver who called himself the Eradicator, and that always makes me think of Kids in the Hall. And one of them was this guy, Steel. So this concerns John Henry Irons, and that's Shaq. He's in the Army. He hangs out with a lady named Susan Sparks and Judd Nelson, who is no longer a gothic pirate anymore. They're all hanging out together, building weapons and doing their thing. Judd Nelson, he flies too high. He makes a weapon that's too powerful. And it sends Susan Sparks. It causes a bunch of damage. She gets put into a wheelchair. Shaq is not happy about this because those dudes are friends. He testifies against Judd Nelson. So now there's bad blood between him and Judd Nelson. And then Shaq apparently quits the Army over this whole situation because that's something you can do. They just let you quit. He goes back to living in Los Angeles, where he hangs out with Ray J, young Ray J, back before he was pooping on people. Or was that somebody else? Was that Ray J who pooped on people?
I don't know anything about this.
It might have been somebody else. Anyway, so Ray J is Brandy's little brother, by the way. And so, you know, he hangs out and he's hanging out with, you know, his wheelchair friend, and they're thinking of ways to stop this Judd Nelson, who at this time is now selling his powerful weapons to you know, gang members and violence people and people who want to rob banks. And so Shaq's... Huh?
Violence people.
Yeah, violence people.
It's amazing.
It's the name of my new band.
Yeah.
So, you know, Shaq sees all this stuff happening. He wants to stop it. And to do this, he needs to get together with Richard Roundtree, who is the character Uncle Joe, and, you know, his friend, his wheelchair friend. And they make this cool armor. You know, it's like this cool metal armor, and they make this big hammer. And at one point, Richard Roundtree is talking about, hey, this is a nice hammer. I really like the shaft. You know, because he was Shaft in that movie Shaft. But it also kind of sounds like he's talking about a dick. So that's funny. See, it's especially funny because, like, Shaq kind of looks at him weird, you know, because it's like a dumb joke because he was Shaft. But if you didn't know he was Shaft, you would think that Shaq was looking at him weird because Shaq knew that he was talking about a dick. there's a lot of... much like with was Double Team that we talked about a couple episodes ago with Dennis Rodman, there's not so much rampant basketballism in this, but there's a lot of times where, like, it's like a running thing where Shaq can't make free throws because in real life... Yeah. And I thought it was, like, just some goofy thing at first, but then it happens more and more, and spoiler alert... In order to save the day, he has to shoot a free throw at the end. So that's about the dumbest.
With a grenade.
Yeah, with a grenade. Speaking of Judd Nelson selling his guns to people, at one point he sells these guns to like a van full of people who are trying to rob a bank, and I think one of them is Flavor Flav, because like they shoot the gun and it like blows up a part of the bank, and he's just like, yeah, boy, oh, this is getting me so excited. Oh, yeah, shooting guns and stuff, and that's very funny. I think it's funny to bring a hype man along when you're doing a robbery.
Oh, I like that. I like that concept a lot. The robbery hype man, that's amazing.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, you should probably always bring a hype man, but especially when you're robbing a bank.
Yeah. That's fantastic. That's really, really something.
One of those henchmen, by the way, has a monster voice for no reason.
That's true.
I couldn't understand that.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was very confusing.
You talk like a mix between a like Cookie Monster and, I don't know, Pinhead or something. It was kind of weird. At one point, you can tell that this is takes place in 1997 because Judd Nelson sells some people a mini disc. That was the only time we had those.
Yeah.
There's a weird Wu-Tang reference for some reason. Ray J just starts spouting off with Wu-Tang lyrics for absolutely no reason.
He's trying to school the white girl.
That's true. And the best way to do that is with the Wu-Tang.
That is true.
It seems as if Shaq and Uncle Joe live in a park for some reason. I think they live in that town that was in They Live, that Roddy Piper lived in for a short time. That little tent city. There's a few Batman and Superman references in this. There's an arcade that Judd Nelson runs for some reason. And the only two games you can see clearly are NBA Jam and Batman Forever. And then also there are like two rich people leaving a movie theater and they get robbed, which seems to be a Batman reference. And just a couple of less obscure ones where they're just like, hey, Shaq, you look like Superman. And it's like Shaq has a Superman tattoo and stuff like this. Like just a real... Not beating around the bush here with that.
It's a very layered writing kind of concept there.
Yeah. This movie, I'm going to spoil some of the ending. There's a part where Shaq is like trying to infiltrate Judd Nelson's bad guy base. Like all these bad guys come together. And
I really want to open a bar called Judd Nelson's Bad Guy Base.
That would be the best bar name ever.
You couldn't keep me away from a bar. You'd have to physically restrain me from trying to go to a bar called Judd Nelson's Bad Guy Base.
Oh, let's get a Kickstarter going. Let's open up that bar quick.
Hell yes. Get an NBA Jam machine in there.
Get a hype man for your bartender.
Oh, yes.
Oh, he's pouring them drinks, B. He's pouring them drinks.
Air horns. Oh.
And, yeah, so he infiltrates his bad guy base, and he fails miserably, and, you know, they get the jump on him, and then, he's just standing there, like, we've already seen multiple times in this movie that his armor is bulletproof, but then when Judd Nelson puts a gun on him, like, he's just like, oh, you got me, Judd Nelson, and so that's ridiculous, and then it turns out the wheelchair chick has a bunch of rocket launchers and laser guns on her wheelchair, so she saves the day. And Shaq doesn't really do much of anything, mostly probably because he can't move in this outfit that he's wearing. And just a hunk of shit. This movie is mostly a hunk of shit, but there's a lot of funny stuff in it, a lot of goofy stuff. And, you know, I think it's, you know, I don't know. It's not good at all. It's not a good superhero movie. But I don't know. It's charming in some ways. How do you guys feel about it?
I mean, I feel great at this point because now we've come away with violence people and Judd Nelson's bad guy base. So yeah. That is alone worth me having to watch this movie. I watched this by myself, drinking cup after cup of coffee, just hating my life, just absolutely miserable trying to watch this like terrible, like too small file like on my computer, just like grumbling and like crushing these coffee cups in my hand, like but yeah, it was very funny and just totally absurd. This movie kind of predicted segues at the end, spoiler alert, wheelchair lady rigs her wheelchair so that she can like stand up and do her weird ET finger thing with Shaq in there, non-sexual, uncomfortably weird relationship that they have. Shaq's grandma is very funny in this, although I wish it had been Shaq in Old Face and Drag. That would have been funny. I felt really bad for Richard Roundtree being in this because you could tell that he needed money. And he wasn't going to get any of that money from the Shaft remake with Sam Jackson. I think that was a few years ago. Yeah. I could not believe that this came out in 97. I don't know how... I don't know what year I thought this came out, but it was not 97. The free throw with the grenade was really funny. The Wu-Tang stuff was awesome. Monster voiced guy was very confusing. I think at one point in this, no, you know what? It might have been in The Punisher. I think it was in Punisher, and I meant to bring this up, but somebody says 2 a.m. in the morning, which is a theme of mine. That was in The Punisher, though, so I don't know why I'm talking about it now. Don't see this, maybe. Unless, if you're going to do, like, a basketball stars in movies theme night at your apartment or something, then watch it. But don't just do like me and sit around on Sunday morning at, like, 9 a.m. just, like, pounding coffee, drinking, pounding coffee and drinking steel. And just being miserable about it. But, yeah, very funny. Movie, in hindsight.
Yeah, this movie is terrible. I remember when Shaquille O'Neal first came out, you know, he was everywhere. You couldn't escape him. And this was after Kazam, I think. And we should have known better. We should have just said, Shaq, you can't do everything.
Yeah, we're good on this.
Yeah. But I never saw this when it came out, and rightfully so. I would have been very happy never having seen this movie because it is just awful. As we learned with Double Team, basketball players are usually awesome actors, and this is no exception. Shaq is just so good as an actor. It's unbelievable. Just one of the best actors of all time. No, this is it's just terrible. The special effects are bad. The story is garbage. The acting, it's pitiful. The only good thing about this is Richard Roundtree, who provides us with this classic line.
Well, I'll be dipped in shit and rolling breadcrumbs.
Which I can't get enough of. It is funny, though. It does feel like the perfect mix of Double Team and conflict of interest, because we've got Judd Nelson in a creepy villain role and a basketball player making... lame basketball jokes. So it really felt like those two worlds colliding, and I'm like, haven't I seen this already? But no, it was just conjuring up memories of those two movies. I also found it weird that Shaquille O'Neal had this weird non-sexual relationship with Susan Sparks. Everything about it seemed romantic other than the fact that they were very clear to let you know that it wasn't romantic. So I don't know if they were like afraid to like broach like the interracial thing, or if it was because she was in a wheelchair, or who knows, but it seemed like it very much should have been a romantic relationship, but for whatever reason they just kind of stopped short.
Well, they probably couldn't squeeze any more story into this like, you know, steam ripping script.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just thought this was unwatchable. And in retrospect, I don't know. I think this is probably worse than that Fantastic Four movie. Because at least the...
Okay, wait. Tell me why you think that.
Well, the Fantastic Four movie, it had cool makeup effects for the thing. I mean, not cool, but at least entertaining. And it got somewhat exciting at the end, where this was just... I never thought this was exciting at all. This was just boring.
I think I would... God damn it, why am I going to say this? I think I would rather watch Steel again than watch that Fantastic Four movie again.
Yeah, that Fantastic Four movie. At least
there's like a loose Wu-Tang affiliation with Steel.
And Steel doesn't turn into like a screensaver at the end, like in Fantastic Four with Human Torch.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, yeah. Human, we didn't mention this, but to spoil the ending, Human Torch has to like take some bullshit like laser into space to save the world at the last minute in Fantastic Four. But he's a dude who's made out of fire. So once you go into space, there's no oxygen, so you die. I don't care how much fire you're made out of. And also, fire needs oxygen to be on fire.
Yeah,
what I mean, about the sun then.
Yeah, I don't know why we're arguing. I mean, it's like arguing what's better, like you know, what tastes better, a bowl of shit or a bowl of vomit. They're both awful, and this was the worst week of my life watching.
Is the bowl of shit also rolled in breadcrumbs?
Yeah,
because that could be a game changer. Yeah, why don't we just do Space Jam, and just call it a day?
And Simon Says. Not. We got to do Simon Says.
No.
Oh, we're doing Space Jam. I don't know. If you thought you were ever going to get out of doing Space Jam on the show at some point, I have terrible news for you.
Motherfucker!
If nothing else, it's going in the randomizer. 5,000.
Nice. So would you say that this week, then, was worse watching than...
all of Ghoul Summer?
Yeah, some of that Ghoul Summer stuff?
Yeah.
You would rather watch the Bunny Game than watch Steel?
I don't know. At least there was some danger there or something. I felt like I was watching something I shouldn't. This elicited no emotion from me whatsoever.
Yeah, this is something you shouldn't watch, but for different reasons.
What about that time where Judd Nelson's big villain move was when a guy's like, "Hey, is this hot dog made out of pork? I can't eat pork." And Judd Nelson's like, "No, it's turkey." And then later on, Judd Nelson's like, "Hey, you know what? It was pork." And the guy's like, "You son of a bitch!" And he gets all mad.
That seems like, you know what? That almost parallels as evil as Dr. Doom was in that Fantastic Four movie.
It's true.
I also like that Judd Nelson said, "Eat the hot dog. Don't be it."
Yeah. That's just sage advice.
That's quality writing.
Yeah. Somebody probably said that to Judge Nelson. Judd Nelson. Like at Craft Services, and he was like, "I'm putting that in the movie. I don't care." A crud Nelson.
Yeah. Also, it's weird. This movie, the role of the wheelchair lady, was based on the character of Oracle, who's a Batman person, not a Superman person. So it's weird. Thing to include, I guess, in your Superman story?
I don't think this was supposed to have anything to do with that Death of Superman storyline.
Well, right? Yeah. Well, yeah, it's just based on that character who came out of that storyline.
Yeah. They call him a Man of Steel at one point, though, don't they? Did I make that up? Or?
I believe so. That was this guy's full name until it got shortened to Steel when he got away from Superman in the comics. Yeah, I don't think this movie is supposed to have anything to do with Superman. It's just based loosely on that comic guy who came out of that whole Superman thing.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I guess that wraps up Steel. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to tell you about how cash rules everything around us.
All right, well, that just about wraps up episode number 128 of Junk Food Dinner. We'd like to thank everybody for tuning in and listening. If you enjoy the show, make sure you visit our website, junkfooddinner.com. There you can find all of our past episodes easily chronicled for your listening pleasure. You can download the MP3 right from the website or stream it right there as well. Make it even easier on yourself. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. There's a link to our iTunes page right there on the website, or you can just search for us in iTunes. Subscribe to the show and have it delivered directly to your iPhone, iPad, whatever, as soon as it's available. If you don't do the whole iTunes thing, we're also available on Stitcher and Google Listen, or however you listen to your podcast, we're probably there as well. If you'd like to get in contact with us, please do by sending us an email at jfdpodcast@gmail.com or leaving us a voicemail message at 347-746-JUNK. That's 347-746-5865. You can also hook up with us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for us on either of those or just follow the link on the handy-dandy website, junkfooddinner.com. If you like Parker, check out his other podcast, poolpartyradio.com. There, he and Frisbee can talk about a lot of fun stuff. I just listened to the most recent episode, Parker. Very, very entertaining. You guys are really coming into your own over there.
Yeah, we got a new intern who's helping us out. That's a lot of fun.
If you like Mark, check out Spectacle Theater at spectacletheater.com. And if you're in the New York area, visit him and check out some weird movies at the Spectacle Theater. What do you guys got coming up at the Spectacle, Mark?
Well, we got a bunch of cool stuff in October. We have the Spectuber series, which is a continuation of last year's Spectober, just really crazy, bizarre, lost seasonal cinema from around the world. And then tons of special events. Peter David is coming back again. Roy Funkies will be out for another night. Who else? Women Make Movies. We're doing this country music documentary called Heartworn Highways, and the producers coming out for that and stuff. So lots of different and fun stuff.
Cool. Well, speaking of October, next week kicks off the beginning of Schlocktober, where we will be having, for all 5 weeks of October, a horror-themed show, all culminating with our big Halloween episode at the end of the month. Our first week in Schlocktober, we focus on vampires. We'll be taking a look at Vamp from 1986, Jugular Wine from 1993, and Stakeland from 2011, so that should be a lot of fun, and we are amped up about Schlocktober, so you should be too. So, until next time, this is Kevin Moss, Mark Fredo, and Parker Bowman for Junk Food Dinner. Saying adios, everybody. We will see you next time.
Junk Food Dinner.
Junk Food Dinner.
Episode
21.
Make way for
Cutting
Justice.
Make way for Cutting
Justice.
This is Ring the
Fathers.
This is Clobber.
Broomstick Arms.
Boundaries.
Today, up first.
It's Clobber.
Broomstick Arms.
Boundaries.
We examine the
closet.
Mid-90s.
System of
Judge,
Jury,
and
Executioner.
This
is
so
blunt.
It
takes
a person.
It makes
a person.
Judge,
Jury,
and
Executioner.
With the help of a sledgehammer and the power of free throw
in steel
from 1997.